Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
On Thursday, the U.S. will default on its debt for the first time in our nation's history unless Congress and the President pass a spending bill and raise the debt ceiling by then. The heads of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce representing businesses, the AFL-CIO representing labor unions, and the nonprofit United Way have all urged Congress to end this shutdown and avoid a default by tomorrow. If the nation does default on its debts, economists warn this could trigger a stock market crash, soaring interest rates, and a global recession. The U.S. would be unable to borrow money and would be able to spend only cash on hand, creating an uncertain future for all who rely on federal money, including Social Security and Medicare recipients. Foreign creditors could seek to cash out their U.S. bond holdings, leaving the government unable to pay its debt. Standard & Poor's has downgraded the U.S. credit rating in reaction to the stalemate in Washington. The impasse began when House Republicans passed a spending bill that defunded the Affordable Health Care Act, known as Obamacare. The Senate and President refused to approve this, and the government shutdown began on October 1st, leaving federal workers furloughed without pay, national parks shut down, and a halt brought to many federal programs, from small business loans to student loans, to help for hungry Americans under the Women, Infant, and Children Supplemental Nutrition Program. On Wednesday, Senate leaders in both parties announced they've reached a deal that they believe could avoid a shutdown, but details have not been released as of taping our show Wednesday afternoon. The deal, however, must still be approved by the House, and there is still no assurances that the House will accept it. Reportedly, 17 Republicans will have to join with 200 Democrats pledged to pass the measure in order to secure approval. That will require a simple vote in which the majority rules. But so far, Republicans in the House have blocked this, insisting on bringing to the floor votes only on measures that have a majority of the Republicans in agreement. A procedure known as the Hastert Rule, although former Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert has since repudiated this tactic. Now, if the senator's deal is approved by the House and the President, it would only be a short-term fix, funding the government through January 15th and raising the debt ceiling until February 7th. After that, the battle would begin all over again. According to CNN, polls indicate that voters are overwhelmingly critical of Congress over the shutdown, although substantially more blame Republicans than Democrats or the President for the mess. One option is for the House to allow a vote on a clean continuing resolution, meaning a spending bill that includes funds for the health care reforms already passed by Congress and upheld by the Supreme Court. Among local legislators, predictably, Democrats Susan Davis, Juan Vargas, and Scott Peters all favor this approach. Now, Republican Daryl Issa has announced that he would break from Tea Party extremists and vote for a Republican version of a clean continuing resolution that would fund most Affordable Care Act provisions, if it would rescind health insurance subsidies for members of Congress, the White House, and their staff members, placing all of them under Obamacare. Of the San Diego congressional delegation, that leaves just Republican Duncan Hunter uncommitted to prevent a default. East County Magazine called Hunter's office on Wednesday. A staffer predicted that there will not be a vote on a clean continuing resolution in the House. However, he added, if ISA's proposal is added, Hunter would consider it. The East County Chamber of Commerce told East County Magazine on Wednesday that it has no position on the matter, putting the local chamber at odds with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that has strongly urged Congress to avoid a default on America's national debt.
This is Isaac Rodriguez with a health alert. Nearly two dozen San Diegans have fallen ill with salmonella due to chicken products from Foster Farms facilities in California. The products were also sold under other brands and store names including Ralph's, Safeway, Kirkland, which is sold at Costco, O Organics, and Eating Rights. Nationwide, 278 people in 18 states have fallen ill due to contaminated chicken. Foster Farms announced that it has reached an agreement with federal inspectors to make improvements to its processing. The company has not yet recalled products, insisting that cooking the tainted chicken thoroughly eliminates risk. But Consumer Reports contends that the chicken products should be recalled to protect consumers. If you eat chicken, be sure to avoid contaminating food preparation surfaces and thoroughly clean any surface that comes in contact with raw chicken. Use a food thermometer when cooking to assure that the meat is cooked.
This is Miriam Raftery reporting for KNSJ and East County Magazine. San Diego's former mayor, Bob Filner, has pled guilty to felony and misdemeanor charges related to the sexual harassment allegations that led him to resign. A plea bargain will end Filner's political career and keep him out of jail. Just hours after the California Attorney General filed charges on Tuesday, the former mayor pled guilty to felony false imprisonment and two misdemeanor counts of battery. Under a plea agreement, Filner will never seek public office again. The victims were not named, identified only as Jane Doe's. The felony false imprisonment count entailed Filner using what's become known as the Filner headlock to restrain a woman while kissing her against her will, according to the prosecutor. The misdemeanors included kissing a woman on the lips without consent at a Meet the Mayor event and fondling another woman's backside while having a photo taken at a rally. Formal sentencing will take place December 9th. Filner's attorney told reporters that the guilty plea provides a way for Filner and the women affected to put the matters behind them. He added that Filner will continue with rehabilitation and regrets his actions. Attorney General Kamala Harris, a Democrat, called Filner's conduct an extreme abuse of power and said the charges indicate that no one is above the law. The attorney general handled the investigation after San Diego District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis recused herself due to a conflict of interest because she ran against Filner for mayor. Under the plea bargain, Filner will be placed on probation for 3 years, with the first 3 months on home confinement. He agreed to undergo mental health counseling and must also give up his mayoral pension from the date of the felony in March to his resignation August 30th. For Filner, a career politician who previously served in Congress as well as on San Diego City Council and the San Diego Unified School District Board, the harshest penalty may well be the requirement that he never run for political office again. Reactions were mixed among San Diego leaders. Democratic Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, former head of the Labor Council, tweeted, "He admitted it. Move on. Stop with bizarre conspiracy rumors and stop blaming women." City Attorney Jan Goldsmith stated that the action underscores the importance of Mr. Filner's removal from office. San Diego Sheriff Bill Gore said that more than 200 calls came into a hotline set up for handling the allegations of sexual misconduct by the mayor, although some of those were witnesses, not victims. Deputies interviewed nearly 90 people. Sheriff Gore said the ultimate decision on the charges against Filner was made by the state attorney general. He added that the hotline is now closed and the investigation is ended. He concluded, "Today's guilty plea ends a dark chapter in San Diego's history." Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ, and we've been speaking all week with Cedar Fire survivors as we approach the 10-year anniversary of the Cedar Fire. And today, my guest is Rudy Reyes. Rudy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Rudy is the worst burned victim of the Cedar Fire. Tell us the extent of your injuries, Rudy.
Okay, I'm about 65-70%. Nobody can give you an exact number. They can give you a guesstimation.
You were burned over 65% of your body.
Correct. It left me with about 50-plus surgeries. Well, when it first happened, I was put into or induced into 2 months worth of a coma. During those 2 months, they performed, I'd say, 28, 27 surgeries, if my memory serves me. By the time I woke up, they had taken off my ear, amputated a finger. Bunch of work was in process. Up to this point, I've now had about 50 surgeries done.
Wow. I mean, in those days, 65%, was it unusual for someone even to survive something that serious?
We normally don't survive past 30%. I was told by many people that, you know, you wanted to live.
Yeah, it's that spirit, I think, that kept you going. Let's walk back to the night of the Cedar Fire. It was October 25th, 2003. Mm-hmm. You were living in Lakeside.
Up by Wildcat Canyon.
Yeah, and you were there with your parents, is that correct?
Correct.
What happened?
Well, that night for me started off, we were getting ready for Halloween. It was an early night, so I came home about 10 o'clock and went to bed. Mm-hmm. That was it. For me, that was that whole night. It was a pretty simple night. I was out with friends a little bit earlier and I was tired because I'd gotten up early.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 27.
Yeah, so young man.
I had built my own place down at the bottom where it once was a garage, and I was living there as, you know, my little bachelor pad.
So when did you become aware that there was a fire?
From what I understand, that fire started at 4:30 that afternoon. We weren't aware until we physically saw it at about 3:30 the next morning.
Wow. Someone just happened to wake up? How did you know?
The way I had built the place, a window was right over my bed and a fan was set up so fresh air was coming in at all times. I was lucky in the fact that I kind of smelled something different.
So the smell of smoke woke you up.
And my sister, around the same time, ends up coming to the door and telling me to evacuate. Well, now I'm woken up at 3:30 in the morning saying evacuate, and I turn on the light. There's no lights.
Power was
out. So I get myself dressed in the darkness, go downstairs, and my sister's like, there's a fire coming, get out. Well, what about Mom? Mom says she's going to stay, plenty of fires, don't worry about it. Well, if I'm going to evacuate, I'm not going to let my mom stay. So I ran up to her house. I get to her house, everybody's asleep. We don't lock the doors in the house because we're way up in the mountains.
Thank goodness.
That's right. But the point is when I got to her bedroom door, which she does keep locked, she's telling me, I'm going to stay in bed. Don't worry. Plenty of fires have been on this mountain, never come to this side. And I go, Mom, you don't understand. So basically, I kick down the door.
Wow.
She's mad at me. I pull her out of bed and bring her out to the porch.
So you were a real hero. You saved her life.
I did what I could. It's my mom.
Yeah.
And
it should be noted that the Smithsonian Institute has actually named you a hero of the Cedar Fire.
Yeah.
So eventually you got your mom to...
Okay, this is the important part. I got my mom out to the front porch. She sees a fire on the other side of the hill. And she goes, don't worry, it's not going to come over here. I told you. And I go, no. And as you look to the side, like we're looking between us, you could see a little red ember falling. And I go, look, if you see that, we're in the fallout zone. It's coming here next. So basically I grab her purse, her stuff, throw her in her truck, and make her leave.
Okay.
Do the same with my brother up there and the person who was renting my room. Okay, because I had built my own place.
So you got them all out.
I got everybody out.
But there wasn't room for you to go with them?
I had figured make them all leave in their own vehicle and I was going to get out in my vehicle.
Okay.
By the time I got down to my place, the fire had moved from the other side of the mountain and was coming up ours. It was so close that I jump in my car, turn it over, and nothing.
It was dead.
Not dead. No, no, no. The fireman explained to me that in a super mega fire, there's no oxygen, not even to create the spark in a spark plug. All the oxygen is being consumed by the fire.
So what did you do?
Well, now I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I look around in my car, and I'm figuring I can stay in the car. It's glass. It's metal. I'll be okay in here. The fire's moving fast. It'll rush over. And in the back of my head, a voice goes, no. If you stay in this car, they're going to find you no better than a roast.
And that happened with some people.
I said, no, I'm not going to. And I come out of the car, and I'm figuring out what to do. And I can see my house isn't on fire yet. Just the top corner of the roof is smoldering. So I go, hey, I can at least get myself something in my place. So I run into my house, open the door, look around. Fortunately, downstairs, I had left a thick pants of corduroy pants.
Okay.
A sleeve shirt. So now I have on some extra clothing. Now I jump in the shower.
Smart idea.
I wet myself down.
With all the clothes.
With all my clothes. Now I come out completely drenched wet, and I look up at the roof. And it was those old rafter-style roofs.
Yeah.
The whole thing looked like water. Blue, because the complete roof was on fire.
Wow.
Okay?
You must have been terrified.
Oh, yeah. Now you're in moment decisions. You're just trying to move and get going. So now I know I can't go upstairs anymore. I got to figure out what I'm doing. I got to leave my house. So I walk out of my house, say goodbye to the house I had built. Now I'm trying to figure out what to do. House is on fire. I'm here in front of my car. I can see the road going down to the main road. Well, we had 10-foot clearance as required by law.
Mm-hmm. Defensible space.
That's right. There was a tunnel for me to get out.
Ah.
Now I'm thinking, hey, if I was a 12-year-old kid and there was a bus waiting right there, I could make this run in 15, 20 seconds. I can do this. It's like running down. Let's say you're looking across a football field at an angle slip down. So it's not that far. That's the area that was on fire.
So you were going to have to run
through it.
Through the wall?
Through the
flames.
Fire, yes. So
how big? How tall was this wall?
We're talking 20, 30-foot flames.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The area that I decided to run down wasn't on fire, but I was surrounded by fire. I psyched myself up into this.
So a tunnel between the flames, the walls of flames.
Yes,
where your defensible space was cleared.
Yes. I psyched myself up for it, and I covered my face. And when I hit that fire line, all I knew was to run, and I knew where my road was. right? Mm-hmm. And I just kept looking down while covering my face with my hands. Well, if you look at my face and hands where my injuries are, you'll notice my left hand pointer finger and my ear kind of correlate in the fact that they're matching. It's because the fire was coming from
your
this
hands
angle.
Took the worst of it in some ways.
Yes,
it
saved my face. Yeah. If it wasn't for my hands, I wouldn't be
right.
Where I
it burns on your chin.
On my chin,
but not around your eyes
correct.
Or your nose.
Correct. Yeah. And that's a blessing in its own.
So then you. As you were running through this wall of flames, what happened? At what point did
As I'm running through the fire, I see fire lick up my face once, and I start to slow down. I start to mastomize, is what they call it, when the muscles no longer want to move because of extreme heat or cold. And my body starts to want to stop. And I'm going, no, if I stop now, that's it. I'm done. So I remember kicking my legs and getting myself moving, and next thing you know, I come out the other side.
When did you realize how badly you were burned?
Well, that's the problem. I'll explain this. As I come out of the fire, I look at myself, and again, I was wet. So I didn't light. I wasn't on fire. So I'm thinking, I'm okay. Now it's 3:30 in the morning again. You can't see anything.
Right.
There's no
Pitch
real
black
light.
Out there. No right? street lights.
So I walk down to the road, and I figured I gotta wait. Somebody's gonna come by and pick me up, and I'll be okay. So I waited there, and like 15 minutes passed, and I started to get disorientated. You know, dizzy. Mm. And I said, if I pass out, they're going to find me dead in the morning.
Right.
I'm not going to let myself pass out. So I just started walking down Wildcat. Not in the road, along the white line, on the side.
Well, 65% of your body burned and you're walking down the road.
It was my options. Okay. So I walk. I get about a mile, maybe a mile and a half, when lights car from behind. And I almost get hit by a white truck. He honks his horn, flashes his lights, and goes around me.
Unbelievable.
Okay. So let's be honest. I flipped the guy off and kept walking. Right? I get another quarter mile, and next thing I know, here come lights again. I don't want it, so I flag the person down, and this lady lowers down her window from her driver's side and says, "You get in this gosh dang car right now," like she's my mom, upset. So the next thing you know, I get in the car, and she tells me, "We gotta get you to a paramedic." "No, you gotta get me my family. My family's supposed to meet at Circle K at the bottom of the hill." "No, I gotta get you to a paramedic. You don't understand." "Okay, well, tell them who I am." So I tell her as much information as I can so that she can relate it to my family.
That's good, so she knew who you
yes.
were.
Yes. And we get to the bottom of the hill, and she says, "You stay in the car. I'm gonna go get the paramedics." Well, the paramedics, she's going to get them. I look at myself and take a quick assessment. Again, I don't know what I look like yet. So I look at my arms, kind of do this. I think I can think. I'm not in much pain. I can talk.
Because it burned the nerves, so you couldn't feel.
Okay. I'm fine. So I come walking out of the vehicle, come around the corner of the vehicle. I see her with the paramedic coming, and I tell the paramedic, "Hey, go find somebody that needs your help more than me. I'm conscious. I'm fine."
Really?
He takes out his flashlight, goes down and up real fast, and goes, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. You don't see what I see right now, and you'd better let me help you."
Amazing.
Okay. So I walk over to the paramedic unit. They cut my clothes off, and they tell me we're putting you to sleep so that you don't feel any pain. I don't feel any pain.
And when did you wake up?
From that point out, I woke up 2 months later. After the induced coma, after they wanted me to wake up again, because they explained that the pain would have been so intense, I probably wouldn't have made it.
How did you feel when you woke up, and did you have any idea where you were or what
now,
had happened?
Now you want to talk about a coma dreams, because I had a lot of coma dreams. And over the years, we're 10 years out, I've had time to kind of analyze and understand what I saw and what I understood. I knew I was being taken care of. I didn't know by whom. I knew something had happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then they got you so narked out under stuff that you kind of start creating your own dreams, and it gets deeper and deeper. And next thing you know, you almost lose touch with reality for a while. I was so deep into a dream state that I knew I wasn't coming back unless I found this certain clock. Huh. Now, the clock was just a tie to me know that my eyes were open, and as I'm looking, there's a clock on the wall.
So it was a concrete thing you could actually
yes,
see.
Yes, that's all it really was. But I knew if I didn't find this clock, I wasn't coming back. But the point is you remember, you understand, you hear all this stuff during a coma that is happening around you.
Do you have memories of things that doctors
yes.
said or
And your mind
said?
Is trying to connect it and make it make as much logical sense as possible. A short version of
Fascinating.
One. I thought I was living with dogs in a camper shell, like a car camper shell, truck camper shell, living with dogs in a camper shell in Sacramento.
Wow.
To make you understand this.
What on earth do you think prompted that?
They had me in a hyperbaric chamber for a while, right? There's your camper shell.
Yeah, oxygen.
Okay, right? They had brought some health dogs to see us. All this happened in one day.
Therapy dogs.
And family from Sacramento had come to see me.
So you were piecing together these pieces of what you heard.
I was piecing it together. Okay, now years later, I can tell you what it was.
Amazing.
Because...
So when you finally did come out of the coma...
You deal with the pain. Now you deal with the hardness. Now you deal with the fact that my fingers were burnt to the bone. You could see bone literally in the finger. And the doctors were keeping them together and telling me I was going to get gangrene and they wanted to amputate. Mm. My mom wouldn't let them and it was up to me. I was blinking to communicate. 2 for yes, 3 for no, if I remember.
So you couldn't speak?
No, they had trachea hole.
Oh, I see.
So because I had inhaled fire. I had inhaled fire, and from what they told me, there were also spores released during the fire, which had gotten in and might have caused an infection. All these complications had happened. If I remember correctly, 120 some odd yards of skin were used, cadaver skin were used to keep me around. The problem is I'm a brown skin person, and normal white cadaver skin doesn't accept to us.
Because you're part Native American.
Correct. So they had to literally grow and work with a lot of my own flesh. And that's why with me, when you look at me, you see all the little round dots.
Yeah.
That's because they take the flesh that they can from elsewhere, put it through a machine that perforates it, and stretch it out so they can take up as much area as it can.
That's amazing. So you had a lot of years of surgery and recovery. And do you still have more ordeals like that ahead, Rudy? Or is that behind you now?
It's a never-ending battle on that level. See, I've had my eyes laser done. You name the plastic surgery or the type of surgery, I've probably had it done. Okay?
And yet, you haven't let it make a victim out of you in a sense. You're not somebody who's just sat back and said, I'm just content to be a invalid the rest of my life or something. Well, you've really gone out and done some very positive things with your life since then. Can you tell us about some of that?
I need to talk about that real fast because
okay.
I've gone through the whole rainbow of emotions on that. You know, when I was sitting in bed thinking, is this going to be life? Can I no longer move? Is this what it's going to be like for the rest of my life?
That'd be terrifying.
That was scary. And then as you make progress, and as things come more, next thing you know, I had to teach myself to do everything from eating because my fingers don't work to walking. I had to teach myself to do
it. Did you have health insurance that covered this for you?
No. Basically, I'm still living Social Security Medi-Cal. Mm-hmm. Right? And don't get me wrong, with this much injury, a lot of companies won't hire me. Mm-hmm. They're scared of possibilities of health issues. So I realized a long time ago I was going to be caught into a nice hole. So what I decided to do was make the best of it for not just me, but everybody around me. Let me go back to when I was injured and I saw I was the worst in San Diego. Now you're the worst in San Diego and everybody's looking at you, cameras on you, because that's what I was. How are you going to react? Right?
Yeah,
well,
are you,
if you
a
remember,
role model or
yes, I chose
else?
A role model. I chose it back even in bed. I said, look, this isn't about me. There's a lot of us in San Diego that are injured. We all need to heal. With me, we're all going to get over this.
So you've gone out and you've become an advocate for not only improving fire prevention, fire safety, you know, better communications, all of these things at the political level. You've also been an advocate for burn victims. Can you tell us a little bit about these two areas of your life?
I'm constantly going to meetings with the Burn Institute, the San Diego Burn Institute. I'm constantly trying to support them as much as I can because they supported me when I needed them. In regards to my family, which is the burn people, the burn community,
mm-hmm.
My first year, I was really dark. I didn't know what it was like, and I was really alone. And I went to this gathering they called World Burn Congress. And
World at this, Burn Congress.
Correct. And at this gathering, they pulled together families of burn survivors to help you come out and see and understand that others are dealing with also. And you come away feeling a little better about just your situation, understanding that you are going to heal.
Yeah, it takes a lot of years. Just knowing that it can get better, that
yes.
It will get better, has got to be inspirational.
From that point, I made it my point to go back to the hospital and allow other burn survivors, even in hospitals, say, hey, look, touch. It's going to be okay. It's going to heal. Okay? Because when you're sitting there burned, you don't know. And you're scared.
Yeah.
Okay? So these steps, I learned we need to do and it needs to happen.
And you've been a face for fundraising events for the San Diego Burn Institute and other good causes as well.
Yes. I've worked with the United Way, the Burn Institute, Tissue Banks International. You name it, I try to make myself available to them because of the fact that they don't get many like me, much less many that can understand and speak the way I can.
Yeah. And you've run for office, didn't win, but do you think that just having your voice out there, being a squeaky wheel on behalf
of fire
victims, has helped bring about some positive changes?
Really? Yes. Yes. And the big reason why I run is because of the fact that if these politicians aren't going to do their job, someone like us needs to step up and do it for them. And that's where it drops to.
Yeah. What are some of the changes you've seen that you think have helped to make us safer, to maybe lessen the chances that this kind of a tragedy will happen to people in the future?
Just the communications alone. Just the fact that we're actually able to organize ourselves in a better fashion. I mean, we're on Facebook as a party chat line for fires.
Yeah.
We got the reverse 9/11 happening.
And let's mention that. That's the Brush Fire Party Line out here in Lakeside,
correct,
which is an amazing site that where citizens get on there and they post about fires happening. And I think they've even started a call bank where if one person learns about a fire,
yep,
they're going to be calling,
yep,
waking up their neighbors,
yep,
not relying on 911, which wasn't even around reverse 911 back then. It is now, but it's not perfect. In 2007, we know some people got missed or they didn't hear it. So the community really does seem to be rallying around
out
here in Lakeside.
That's right. If the resources aren't going to be made available, we'll create them. And that's what it's dropped to. You also go down to the fact that it isn't just here in San Diego. This is across the board. Look at Texas and how badly they've burned. Look at North California and how badly they've burned.
Yeah, Colorado.
Okay? So therefore, I would argue we need somebody like me at a congressional level, at a state, at a Senate level, at bigger levels,
yeah,
so that...
Have you been back? Have you testified before Congress or other places? I know I've seen you certainly down here at the supervisors.
I've testified in front of the supervisors. I've testified in front of Congress. I don't know if you knew, but Senator Boxer had those hearings in San Diego in regards to the fires.
Yes.
I went there and testified, and basically because of me, they threw it back on the county supervisors.
Interesting.
I've made a lot of friends, and don't get me wrong, I've made some powerful enemies in the fact that I've been vocal.
Mm-hmm.
But we need somebody to be vocal for this community.
And how is your family doing, Rudy? It must have been difficult for them going through this ordeal as well.
My family had to heal just like I did. Everybody had to readjust their life. My sister's got her house going again. My brother's living in my mom's old house. My mom just passed a year ago from cancer, unfortunately.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, we all are.
Now, you were a student at the time, is that correct?
Correct.
Were you able to go back and finish your
education? I've received 2 degrees in archaeology now.
Very good.
I've also been ordained as a reverend.
So you found religion if you didn't have it before.
That's right. Well, come on. How do you go through something as much as I have and not become closer?
Yeah. I guess, do you find yourself asking ever, why me? Why am I the one that was
That's
put
a big
through this
question.
Ordeal and why did I survive
I'm going to teach
it?
You something right now. You'll never know the answer to why. And it only hurts to ask. Okay, so once you realize that and your mind exposes to the fact that why only hurts, you kind of stop asking why. And
yeah,
you move on, you accept. And acceptance is a big key.
Looking into the crystal ball for the future for yourself, Rudy, what do you see? What do you want to accomplish? And are there other things that you really think need to be done to make us safer from these fires? In terms of your personal goals or your goals for helping burn survivors especially.
Number one, of course, you keep hearing me adjust to it. I want to help politically because I see it being the only real cue or key to solving the solution, especially
mm-hmm.
for us here in San Diego, but it's much bigger than just San Diego. We need a better communication amongst everything in regards to emergency services to solve this, especially here in San Diego. They've made many steps, but the major ones were never really tackled. They were kind of ignored.
Such as?
The communications that happened during the Cedar fires and back in 2007, there's still too many, red flags, strings to be pulled to make sure that if there's another mega fire, we're going to have the military helping us with water. We're going to have various things popping up.
Yeah, very good point.
Okay. The fact that we still don't have the proper crew in regards to firemen to actually fight a mega fire because, again, 2 degrees in archaeology, I understand that our area is prone to megafires. That's what happens here.
Yes, long history of that. Okay. The Kumeyaay Indians certainly were cutting fire breaks and battling that for thousands of years before the rest of us came along.
If we don't grip that and have it constantly in mind for our ecosystem that that's what we live in, we're going to constantly be ill-prepared for it when it happens. We can't allow that to happen. The only way that they used to handle this before the year 2000 was through having honors camps of inmates who used to go and clear the back brush.
Correct.
Okay. Make fire brick roads so in case it got wild, they have somewhere to break off to. Okay? In the year 2000, we eliminated those programs. Okay? I don't know why, and I won't, you know, make accusations as to why, but the fact is without that, it's overgrowing. And you can literally take a map and overlay the map and look at what hasn't burned, and that's probably next.
Yeah, there's been some efforts to bring that back, but I know there's been some issues with state funding and the prisoner release program all having impacts. That's a whole other story we could probably talk about someday.
It's the fact that once you release a program, it's so hard to reestablish it.
Yeah.
They release the program and let it go. Now we got to try to reestablish something that's near impossible to do.
So if you could reach out there and talk to listeners who might someday go through something like what you have been through. Heaven forbid that happens to any of our listeners, but with these fires, what words of wisdom, what advice would you offer to other burn victims or fire survivors out there?
Okay. Now let me give you the two scenarios I see. One is for that family on their last minute trying to pull things together. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an emergency happening and you don't know what to take. Take the bare essentials. Get out with your life. Be glad that you left and didn't get injured.
Very wise words.
Okay. To the ones that have survived a major traumatic event, at this present moment, make the best of what you have. Count your blessings. Don't look at the negativity, because the negativity is only going to drown you.
Very good. Well, Rudy, I want to thank you for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, and we certainly all wish you the best as you continue your path to recovery.
No, once again, Miriam, I thank you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. The 4th Annual Spring Valley Tailgate and Barbecue Festival will take place on Sunday, October 20th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Troy Street, between Bancroft Avenue and Central Avenue. Initiated by the Spring Valley Chamber of Commerce and Cali Comfort Restaurant, the goal of the festival is to raise money for youth sports programs in Spring Valley. Organizers hope to have 30 amateur barbecue teams participating in this year's competition. The amateur teams will be competing in five categories: tri-tip, pork ribs, chicken, best decorated tailgate team, and more. The event also features games, activities, and live music in addition to barbecue tastings. The Phoenix rises for the 7th year at the Tournament of the Phoenix and Festival of History in Poway from October 18th through the 20th at the Poway Rodeo Grounds from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. The preview day is Friday, October 18th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Knights in shining armor astride gorgeous chargers, the crack of shattered lances, the flash of swords, live music, food, and fun return to Poway, October 18th through 20th at the Tournament of the Phoenix. Jousting knights from the United States, Poland, New Zealand, and the Netherlands compete in a 6-event competition. The audience can also explore hands-on history at its best as the Festival of History presents Rome to the Renaissance. There will also be various games, crafts, activities, skill contests, and the opportunity to meet the knights at the Knights Camp. Artisan crafts booths, delicious food, and live music will round out the event. The Alpine Firefighters will be holding their 20th annual open house on Saturday, October 19th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Tavern Road in Alpine. A fun day for the whole family. The open house includes close-ups with Smokey the Bear, McGruff the Crime Dog, Fire Canine Pyro, and Sparky the Fire Dog. The kids can enjoy face painting, balloons, and a snake display. Child ID and fingerprinting will be available, courtesy of the Kiwanis Club. There will also be food, fire displays, free gifts, and raffles. The East County Live Well Expo and Community Safety Fair is a two-day event celebrating healthy living for all lifestyles. The expo is presented by the California Health Network, Meals for Hunger, and the Santee Fire Department. It will be held on Friday, October 18th, from 3 to 8 p.m., and Saturday, October 19th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Sunrise Community Church on North Magnolia Avenue in Santee. There will be door prizes, local VIPs, fitness demos, a bike rodeo, food you, and fun family activities at this free event. Day 2 will feature a community safety fair put on by the Santee Fire Department, with tours of emergency vehicles and kids' activities, a huge Zumba class by Crunch Fitness, Food You with healthy cooking demos and snack tasting, Bicycle Rodeo, which is sponsored by the San Diego Sheriff's Department, as October is Crime Prevention Month. And then they will have dance and martial arts performances, therapeutic laughing class, fitness events, and more. Al Bar Shrine will be holding an all-day cook-off with entertainment called Rising from the Ashes on Saturday, October 19th at the Al Bar Shrine Center on Kearney Mesa Road. The event is a fundraiser to rebuild their Mount Laguna Shrine Camp, which burned this past summer in the fire on Mount Laguna. Once in a Blue Moon is the name for the 7th Annual Gala Dinner and Auction, held on Sunday, October 20th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. For the first time, the event will be held off-site in El Monte Valley at the Hazy Meadows Ranch Under the Stars, where guests can enjoy live entertainment, a Santa Maria-style barbecue, and both live and silent auctions to help support Lakeside's River Park Conservancy. The Conservancy celebrates and preserves the San Diego River. Funds raised this year will go toward restoration of the San Diego River to improve water quality and flood control, restoration of plant and wildlife habitat, and the creation of new trails along the San Diego River for the East County community of San Diego. Acumba hikers and walkers have planned an easy-to-moderate fall walk hike on Saturday, October 19th, to Border Fence and Rock House. The group will walk from the border fence separating the United States and Mexico from the Acumba Lounge to the Acumba Airport and Old Rock House. The distance is 5 miles round trip. Hikers can meet at 8 a.m. at the Acumba Lounge on Old Highway 80 in Acumba Hot Springs. It is a dog-friendly hike if the dog is on a 6-foot leash. The Mark Jackson Trio will be performing at the Ramona Library on Saturday, October 19th from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. as part of the San Diego County Acoustic Showcase Series. The trio's country music recalls the road and the wide-open places of North America, including long sojourns through the heartland, according to Simeon Flick from the San Diego Troubadour. Also, as part of the San Diego County Acoustic Showcase Series, Sarah Petit will be performing at El Cajon Library on Saturday, October 19th from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. The El Cajon Library is located on East Douglas Avenue in El Cajon. Michael Toombs, San Diego News Network, describes Petit's music as a rockin' honky-tonkin' delight rooted in the heartbreak of Petit's lyrics and vocals. A fall festival in Alpine, sponsored by the San Diego Business Associates, takes place this Saturday, October 19th, and will be a fun-filled free admission family day with children's games and a bouncy entertainment, food, silent auction, and local merchants with jewelry, crafts, and more. The festival takes place between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. in the Albertsons parking lot on Alpine Boulevard and benefits the Heights Charter School in Alpine. Part of the festival features a Halloween pet costume contest sponsored by Natural Instincts. Judging starts at 2 p.m. with three grand prizes consisting of doggy daycare, dog training, and grooming. The Campo Depot Museum has announced the 2013 Pumpkin Express in its 10th year at the Great Pumpkin event at the museum. Travel to the Great Pumpkin's Pumpkin Patch and tour the haunted train where kids can pick out and decorate their own pumpkin. The trains are popular and seating is limited, so reservations are required. Trains leave at 10 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. The museum at the Campo Depot on State Highway 94 and Forest Gate Road recommends that riders arrive in Campo at least 45 minutes before departure time, especially if they haven't been to Campo before. We are continuing our coverage of local East County pumpkin farms and pumpkin patches this week. The El Cajon Pumpkin Station is located at Westfield Parkway Plaza in El Cajon. The station includes a mini and giant slide, Ferris wheel, play center, kids' helicopter and train rides, a petting zoo, and of course a pumpkin patch. At Bonita Pumpkin Farm, there are farm attractions such as animals, a tractor hay wagon, an 8-foot-high corn maze, picnic area, and pick-your-own pumpkins. They are open daily throughout the entire month of October, Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. They are located on the corner of Sweetwater Road and Bonita Road. Now for a preview of some fun activities that may require planning or ticket purchases. The second annual Haunt Fest in El Cajon will be held on Friday, October 25th, from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., and is located at East Main Street and Rhea Avenue in El Cajon. Guests can enjoy live bands, a juried art show, costume contests, a haunted house, carnival rides for the kids, food, and more. Palomar Mountain State Park's third annual Apple Festival takes place on Sunday, October 27th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. There is free admission. Did you know that the park has apple trees planted by homesteading pioneers from over 100 years ago, and they're still producing delicious apples to this day? Guests can come spend the day at the park to enjoy food, music, games, arts, and crafts, all with an apple harvest theme. The HEART, Heart Mural Project of Ramona, along with their generous sponsors, is presenting the first annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival to be held at the historic Amy Strong Castle at Mount Woodson. The festival will be held on November 2nd from noon to 6 p.m. Art, wine, and food enthusiasts may purchase passports to the event by visiting RamonaArtAndWineFest.net. The event features local artists, Ramona wineries, and local chefs, each of which will be located around the castle. Musicians will provide background music as patrons browse the creations of 15 fine artists, sip award-winning wines from 12 wineries, and taste culinary delights from 5 local chefs. The All-American Soapbox Derby Rally Race, sponsored by the La Mesa Kiwanis Club and Drew Ford, will conduct its annual Soapbox Derby Rally Race on Saturday, November 2nd. Youngsters age 7 through 18 will compete in the Double Elimination 3-Division Derby, held on Junior High Drive adjacent to La Mesa Middle School. Highwood Park is the staging area. Heats get underway by 9 or 9:30 a.m. Families with kids from throughout Southern California, Arizona, and Nevada are expected to make the trip. Rally race winners in stock, super stock, and master division cars earn points to help them qualify for the national race held each July in Akron, Ohio. This is the first year for the age limit to be raised to age 18. Plus, local dignitaries will compete in grudge races. La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid will engage a rival politician. Will engage a rival politician in a special grudge race during the November 2nd Rally Race Derby. Arrangements have been made to have a pair of adult-sized soapbox race cars on hand. Derby Director Blake said the adult heats will be run around the noon hour. The Fall Plant Stravaganza, held at the Water Conservation Garden from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., on Saturday, November 2nd, will help San Diegans make the most of the region's fall to spring planting season and save water while doing it. Retailers and growers will sell shrubs, trees, perennials, succulents, and more. This year, visitors can preview a newly constructed exhibit at the garden, the Dorcas E. Butterfly Pavilion, which is scheduled to come alive with butterflies in early spring 2014. Team Butterfly will be on hand to answer the public's questions about how to create a butterfly garden. And the Rancho San Diego Farmers Market, located near the garden, features organic produce and specialty food booths and will be open during the fall plant extravaganza. Plus, visitors can pick up holiday gifts in the garden's gift shop. Workshops and all activities throughout the day are included with admission, unless specified, and parking is free. The Heritage of the Americas Museum, a close neighbor to the garden, invites guests to its annual Museum Roadshow on Saturday, October 26th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Their Museum Roadshow is an opportunity to bring in a treasure and have Craig Helm, a certified appraiser and authenticator, tell you what he knows about it and how much it may be worth. Craig specializes in Native American and pre-Columbian artifacts, antique pictures, Western memorabilia, and Asian artifacts. He does not identify nor appraise gems and minerals, coins, or stamps, and do not bring any guns onto the campus for appraisal. You can call the museum for more information and check their website at www.cuyamaca.edu/museum. The Heritage of the Americas Museum is located on the campus of Cuyamaca College in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. All of these activities and more can be found in our Festivals and Events section and on our calendar at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, and I'm here today with Larry Poole. Larry is a professional horseman who lives right here in San Diego's East County. He's also an actor, a stuntman, a movie wrangler, and a trail boss with the Hole in the Wall gang. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Thanks for having me, Miriam.
Now, you have been involved in so many different things, it's hard to know where even to start, but I understand that some of the movies you've been involved in were filmed right here in East County, so let's start there. Tell us about a Sierra Nevada gunfight.
We filmed that out in Descanso on Boulder Creek at the Devil's Punch Bowl.
Very famous landmark out here over by the Three Sisters Falls.
Beautiful location, and we were able to film with some A-list Hollywood stars, Michael Madsen, mm-hmm. John Savage, Kirk Harris.
Without giving anything away, what's the movie about?
It's set in the 1870s gold rush of Southern California, right after the Civil War.
Mm.
It's about a Civil War veteran who, with his son, comes to Southern California to hunt for gold.
And what did you do in the movie?
I supplied the horses and did some of the stunt riding.
Oh, my goodness. Stunt riding, I guess, is a pretty exciting field. How on earth did you get involved in that?
Been riding horses since I was a young child and was able to pull off some great scenes with crossing the rivers and made some good horses to put the actors on. Just had a great time.
Very good. Do you ever get hurt doing that?
Couple of times.
Couple times. So what are some of the other stunts you've done in the movies?
You know, anything from getting attacked by zombies to crossing Death Valley in a covered wagon to swimming horses across rivers.
Wow. And I saw a photo there of you standing on horseback even, so you've got a lot of acrobatic skills must take to do that. Who are some of the celebrities, the movie stars that you've been in pictures with?
Danny Trejo, the star of the movie Heat. John Savage from the movie The Godfather and Deer Hunter. Michael Madsen from all the Quentin Tarantino movies. Mark Boone from A Sons of Anarchy.
I think there's a Star Trek actor as well.
Tuvok from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
So you must have quite the family photo album there. Is the genre of Western movies making a comeback?
I hear it's the biggest selling genre of all the American films overseas. They love American cowboys overseas, and we hope to see Westerns make a comeback.
Interesting. Well, that would certainly bode well for the Western settings that we have across East County, including the ranch where I met you out there in Descanso, the Buckle Ranch. They had some really interesting buildings that I guess were just recently constructed. Everything from a blacksmith shop to a barn looked like a movie setting. What are some of the other settings that you've filmed on location at besides the San Diego area?
Well, we've filmed at Paramount Ranch Movie Studios. We've filmed at Melody Ranch, Gene Autry Studio. And we filmed on location in Death Valley, San Bernardino, Ventura County where they filmed Little House on the Prairie. We filmed in Borrego.
So what's next? Do you have anything else coming up?
Possibly have one coming up in November up in L.A. We'll be filming a Western.
Now, another movie coming out, I understand, is called Mountain Duel that was also filmed out here. Can you tell us a little bit about that movie?
That was actually filmed in Descanso also. Great movie. It's in the post-production phase right now.
And what era is that set in? Can you tell us a little about the plot?
That's a Bigfoot movie.
Bigfoot. So we've got Bigfoot right out here in East County, at least on the silver screen.
And you'll see some great San Diego footage in that movie also. It just, this area translates so well onto film. It's just a beautiful area to work.
Fascinating. I understand they're looking for distributors, so watch for that one soon, too. What are some of the other things that you've been in, TV, movie?
We, earlier this year, filmed Quick Draw up at Paramount Ranch. That's showing on Hulu right now. It's original programming for Hulu. That's the new media.
Very interesting. And Rise of the Lone Star Ranger, I think, is another recent film you had some involvement with.
That was filmed at Paramount Ranch up in Hollywood, starring Danny Trejo and Jason Patrick.
Now, you also participated in a pretty big ride recently, I understand. Tell me about that.
Had the honor of riding with Gene Glasscock, the long rider.
And how long was the ride?
The ride went for 3 years from San Diego to Jekyll Island, Georgia, and back to San Diego.
My goodness. And it was a mule-drawn covered wagon, I understand. What portion of that did you go along on?
We crossed California twice, from San Diego to Yuma and back.
Kind of like in Death Valley Days.
Kind of like in Death Valley Days.
There you go. Now, you have a trail ride coming up, I understand, with the Hole in the Wall Gang, which is a Western reenactment and riding group out here.
We have an annual ride that culminates yearly in Borrego Springs for the Borrego Desert Days Festival. That will be finishing on October the 26th.
And when does it start and where?
Starts the weekend before. It's a week-long ride, heading north on the Pacific Crest Trail to the Warner Springs area, and then veering east is the way we normally do it, and we ride into Borrego Springs and kick off their Desert Days Festival.
Very interesting. So the public is certainly invited to that, and they can come see you at that particular event.
They can see us at the Borrego Days Parade on October the 26th.
Now, your group has been around since about 1940, I understand, the Hole in the Wall Gang. How did it all start?
We were started by returning World War II veterans that had a love of horses and horsemanship. They started a nonprofit benefiting local charities that have horse interests. We currently turn a lot of money to the Magic Horse. That's one of our favorite charities off of El Monte Road.
I'm familiar with them. They do amazing work out there helping disabled children with a therapy program on horseback, and it helps them improve their coordination, and some very good people out there.
I've seen it for myself, the wonderful things they do, and it's just amazing to see how a horse can reach into the closed-off mind of an autistic child and open them up. And I've been told that nothing else worked, and yet that small child that had severe disabilities just seems like a normal child to me. We've dealt with horsemanship for the handicapped in the past and a number of other organizations, but usually it's for the children, although lately we've been getting more involved with the Wounded Warrior Foundation.
Yeah, and full disclosure here, the Hole in the Wall Gang was one of the Western reenactment groups that also donated their time at our recent benefit for our nonprofit, East County Magazine, and our wildfire alerts out in Descanso, and I know that everyone enjoyed the show there. You've got another event, I think, coming up in the spring with a different group you're involved in. Can you give us some information about that?
In April, we're going to be appearing at the Night of the Horse in Del Mar.
Mm-hmm. And what is the Night of the Horse?
Night of the Horse is a yearly event centered around the Del Mar National Horse Show.
A lot of East County people involved in that, I imagine. Lots of horses out here.
I understand they're signing up the Victorian Roses Ladies Riding Society, and we've got some Hollywood acts coming down. Professional horsemen from around the country are going to be involved.
You've worked in a lot of movies, a lot of Hollywood celebrities, and a lot of different things, I'm sure, that go on the set. What's it like working there on the set, and do you have any particular memories that stand out in your mind about your movie career?
Well, you know, it's harder work than I ever gave it credit for. Long days, typically 16 to 18 hours, very tiring, and a lot of fun.
Well, it must be great to be living out the dream, so to speak, really doing something that a lot of people probably only dream about and that you and the others involved in this get to do.
I feel very fortunate to be involved. Met a lot of great friends. The folks I've worked with in Hollywood have all been fine, upstanding people. I've enjoyed meeting all of them and working with all of them.
Now, where can people get more information, Larry, if they want to find out about the Hole in the Wall gang or about some of these movies? Is there a website you can suggest?
Of course, you can always Google Night of the Horse Del Mar and Hole in the Wall Gang Lakeside.
There you go. And the movie that's coming out that's on the shelves now is Sierra Nevada Gunfight, if you want to see some local scenery filmed right here in Descanso. Very good. Is there anything else, Larry, that I didn't ask about that you can think of that would be interesting that we should talk about?
Well, I think we've covered everything that I felt like I had to get off my chest this morning, Miriam. Thank you very much, Miriam. It's been a pleasure.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for joining us on 89.1 FM Descanso. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.